how the brain controls physiology. Please welcome to the stage, Connor Mook. He's also the tallest person I've ever met, so tall that the mic stand actually wouldn't get up high enough. So we have to take the mic off the stand. This has never been done before in the history of Story Collider.
I've been very clear that I'm to hold this like this. All right. So sometimes when you are on a research vessel 200 miles off of the coast of New Zealand in 50-mile-an-hour winds and 20-foot seas, you really need to just sit down on the floor of the lab. You spend so much time and effort trying to keep yourself from going down there anyway that it makes sense just to put yourself there on your own terms. Like, why let nature force you to sit when you can do it yourself? It always seems like people are talking about, like, ways to try to make your own destiny, and this just seemed like such an easy way to do that, just to completely control where I was going to end up. Now, I've always been someone who's most comfortable when things feel like they're in control. My family kind of teases me because ever since I was a kid, I've needed to arrive at the train station like half an hour before the train even arrives for me to be at least bearably calm when we're taking a train from our home in suburban New York down into New York City. I need to actually be on the platform. I usually start out on a bench and then pretty quickly start sort of pacing back and forth up and down the platform, because it's like the only way that I can feel confident that everything's going to work out and that we'll actually make the train. As you can expect, I'm actually the same way when flying. I need to be at the airport at least 2 hours beforehand, but preferably 3 hours before the flight's set to depart. I need to go through security. There's no dawdling, no stopping for coffee, for bagels, no shopping until I've actually gotten all the way to the gate and I've confirmed all of our flight information. Then I can relax, and so can anyone else traveling with me, any of those lucky people. My mom's been telling me throughout my life that I really just need to learn how to go with the flow a bit, the sort of thing that she's been telling me forever, and I've been trying to understand. So traveling to New Zealand and joining a research vessel that would be collecting samples from the ocean and then sort of analyzing them in a lab on board seemed like it would be a really good scientific experience for me, because it would sort of force me to change my experiment as the whole world like was dynamically changing around me. So I was really interested on land in studying mouse brains, and so I figured that the natural extension of that to the ocean was to then study fish brains. So a shipmate and I joined this research ship as our junior semester abroad. We went under the ocean with this plan that we would use nets to catch a whole bunch of little fish, and then we would preserve our samples and dissect out their tiny little brains, and then we would look at them and try to see what was different between them. And this project really didn't seem too ambitious to us when we were on land in a sort of a stable lab that didn't move. One of the realities of being out on a ship far offshore for a long period of time is that you can't like anchor or dock so that everyone can like get a normal night's sleep. We sail 24/7, so no matter what's happening around us, no matter what time it is, you know, people have to be on duty both on the in the lab and on deck. So we like have these watches that would switch back and forth. This particular night, I was on watch from midnight to 3 a.m., which is a great watch to be on, as you can expect. We were told at dinner time that we were sort of on the outskirts of a large tropical cyclone. And they've been very clear that those of us who were going to be on watch during the night were really going to get the brunt of this whole thing, which was, you know, particularly fun. We had one of the duties when you were on watch was that you had to make sure that you woke up the people who were going to relieve you at least 15 minutes prior to the watch change, before they actually had to come on deck, give them time to get dressed and get up there. So we had this kind of competition that happened between all the different crew members, that we would try to figure out who could like strike that perfect balance between a successful wake up and a peaceful wake up. Like, how do you actually get everyone up onto deck without them then hating you forever? As you can imagine, this is sort of one of the best competitions to have if you're someone like me who really doesn't enjoy being abruptly woken up right in the middle of the night. Sienna, who is another crew member on the ship, she was the best at this by far, and I was really lucky because she was on the watch ahead of me. So this night she came by and she woke me up at 11:45 precisely. So here's a little taste of how that would go. So Connor. 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 I'd sort of respond hearing this with the like obligatory sort of like pained groan that like makes it sound like this is the worst thing that's ever happened to you. And she kind of took that as a good sign and said, Connor, it's Sienna. This is your wake up. It's 23:45. You have watch in 15 minutes at 2400. It's quite stormy out there. Winds are 50 knots. Seas are about 20 feet. And it's really cold. I would definitely recommend wearing lots of layers and all of your foul weather gear. Okay, so now that I'm like actually awake at this point, which as anyone who knows me will attest usually takes a couple minutes to happen, I sort of look out and I see that Sienna is next to me. She's just woken me up and she has sort of like her back like pressed against the wall next to me. And her arms are like clinging onto the side of my bunk for dear life to keep her from like flying across the room. And then as I watch, she kind of like tries to walk away, but it ends up being more of like a walk slash roll crawl kind of thing as she tries to make her way back up onto deck to reassume her position. So I'm unable to stand up. I sort of like roll myself out of my bunk and land on the floor with a really nice, satisfying thump. And then I do try to stand up, and I'm immediately punished for trying to do that by being thrown across the room because the floor has, again, decided not to cooperate. It has obviously had a lot to drink and is sort of, like, not realizing it's supposed to stay at least, like, generally level. So I decide instead I'm going to sit down. I'm going to try to put on my prescribed foul weather gear and my layers. And so to do this, I sit down and I start pulling on my spray pants and my warm socks and my boots. And I start sliding back and forth across the floor as the waves hit the ship. So you go one way and you slide across, and then you go the other way and you slide back. And the really fun thing about this was that my entire watch group, everyone with me coming onto deck, was also trying to get dressed in the same way. And so we would all slide at the same time out of our bunks into the hallway. We could wave, say good morning, and then we would all slide back into our little nice private area. It's a lot of fun. We tend to find, you know, fun ways to do things like that. So I think I woke everyone else up on the ship. You know, they were not happy with me because I tried to brace myself. I swear I tried to brace myself walking from my bunk to the pilot house where we were all going to meet up before going out on deck. But while I tried to do this, I every time a wave would hit the ship, I would just sort of like slam into whatever wall it decided was best to push me into. And whoever was sleeping on the other side of that wall was obviously not happy with me. So as I actually got to the pilot house and I went up the stairs into the pilot house, I came face to face with the bearded, long-haired, foul weather gear-clad figure of Chuck Lee. Now, Chuck was our chief scientist. He was a somewhat Ahabian researcher who had spent his entire PhD program chasing giant squids around the North Atlantic Ocean. And he was unfazed by this kind of weather. In fact, it seemed more like he actually like lived for this kind of night. Like he had purposefully woken up just because he knew he was going to have the opportunity to don his bright yellow rubber ducky foul weather gear and go out and get thrashed around a bit on deck. So I came face to face with him. He gave me a good solid look, and then he proceeded right out onto deck. I kind of watched him disappear into the storm. His hood blown right off his head. His hair like streaming out behind him in the wind and the spray, and his eyes kind of lit up with what I could only describe as like a maniacal fire. Yeah. Honestly, I was absolutely terrified. Like, everything seemed so out of control below decks. I couldn't even begin to imagine what it was going to be like when I went up on the deck into the storm to try to get over to the lab. Now, while scientific experiments, while the results of these experiments are, you know, often unexpected and surprising, which is something that makes science so exciting, that you get to discover things that you don't really know before, obviously, the essence of the scientific method is control. Like, we control for everything when we design an experiment. We try our best to do that, and when an experiment works and it's really beautifully controlled, the whole process makes me really happy. Like, that's really nice. Now you can actually begin to imagine what I was trying to do as I set myself up on the floor of the lab during that storm. So in addition to trying my best not to just like fall headlong across the lab into a wall, and also keep my lunch and dinner where they belonged, which was my stomach, And incidentally, there's a great term on a phrase on board this ship for what we call it when you can't control your stomach, which is providing an offering to the great god Neptune. So in addition to doing those things, I was also trying to handle the minuscule brains of tiny, and when I say tiny, I mean like really, really small fish that we'd caught. So we had, on the ship, there was this like sort of feeling that you always wanted to retain the greatest sense of normalcy in what you were doing in the lab, no matter what happened around you. So like we would try to be a normal lab despite the fact that like we were on a boat. So we try to retain the sense of normalcy. And so a few days before, we had actually begun dissecting out the brains from some of our fish. And we'd learned in this process why naval surgeons are probably like the best and most talented of the doctors in the world. It is exceptionally challenging to successfully and safely handle a scalpel when the whole lab or the operating room is moving. So I somewhat stupidly decided during the storm to dissect a few more samples out of the brains, out of the heads of our little fish. And after, as you might expect, after like ruining a sample and almost losing a few fingers, I gave up on that. But of course, not after like standing up abruptly, swearing loudly, and then getting thrown across the lab again as punishment. So that was fun. So unable to do that, I decided to try something simpler. I took one of the microscopes from the lab bench and brought it down onto the floor with me and tried to start looking at some of the samples that we already dissected and try to figure out some differences that might be there between them. What I learned from this experience is, first, you might sort of know this and agree with me that when you are out at sea or you're anywhere on a boat in waves, you tend to get a little seasick. What you may also realize is that when you are in a small, enclosed, not particularly well-ventilated room on a ship out at sea in a big storm with big waves, that seasickness starts getting worse. What you may not realize, which I was fortunate enough to realize this night, is that when you look through a microscope at a small, unmoving brain sample in front of you in a small, not well-ventilated space on a ship out at sea with big waves and a storm, that seasickness gets exponentially amplified. To this moment, I think I am more proud of myself for my bodily control in that moment than anything else I've ever done in my life. Like, very impressed with myself for that. So, unable to do this, gonna do this unfortunate reality of the situation, I decided that I'd do something much simpler. I would just try to put some formalin preservative in the vials with our samples and just try to make sure, you know, they had enough and that they were staying preserved. One thing about the lab on the ship that I have not mentioned to you is that we used both formalin and hydrochloric acid in various things on board the ship. And the crew was very clear to us from the beginning that if hydrochloric acid and formalin come into contact, they can undergo a reaction to generate chlorine gas, which would be a really bad thing to generate in a ship that all shares ventilation systems. Now, I have since, coming back, done some research, looked for some papers, and have been unable to find papers or any chemists who will substantiate the fact this reaction actually occurs. But either way, we took this reality as something we needed to deal with, and all the formalin was kept outside of the lab in a deck box. And so if you wanted to come inside, you wanted to come in the lab with the formalin, you had to have it all stored, properly sealed, so it didn't come into contact with anything. So on a nice day, you could expect this to be really nice. You actually get to go out and take a break from the lab, see the world, do some work outside. It's great. On a night like this night, during a storm like this, that wasn't quite as much fun. But I was feeling brave. I wanted to retain the semblance of normalcy in the lab work. So I decided to go ahead and try to put new formalin into my vials anyway. So I kind of grabbed the tray of samples, brought them over to the lab door, secured them as well as I could, grabbed a couple of those vials, and then went out into the storm, out on deck. First thing I did, which was an important safety feature of this ship, was that I had a harness and I tethered it onto something so that I wouldn't be blown overboard or blown down again onto the floor. And as soon as I did that, I actually like started kind of protecting my samples from the spray and the wind and unscrewed the tops and then started putting like formalin in each of these little vials to try to keep preserving them. And of course, the wind keeps trying to blow us over. The waves are still rocking the ship like crazy. The storm's still happening around us. And my jacket starts getting kind of soaked through by the rain. And as you might expect, my samples inevitably started becoming contaminated with a lovely mix of seawater and rainwater. And so in this moment, surrounded by this crazy storm and the rain and the wind and everything, I finally realized what my mom had meant so many years ago when she said, go with the flow, over and over again. Sometimes the world just can't be in control, and you have to realize, as I did in that moment, that it makes so much more sense just to let it happen around you. Thank you.
Keep it going for Connor Muck. So I am I'm a theoretical physicist, which means that I use math to study physics. And Connor's story is a good example of why I chose to be a theoretical physicist, because you never need to get on any boats, and you're never in the middle of a storm. The